Well, hey, good morning, folks. How are you? Good, 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 good. I just want to give a special shout out to our lobby crew out there. You guys, yeah. Well, they're the folks roughing it out there with big candy bars. So it's so thank you guys so much for being here. If you're new here, my name is John Wagler. I'm part of the team, and just so thankful that you're here. We know sometimes choosing a church is a difficult thing to do because maybe you've had a hard church experience. Or maybe you're just trying to figure out a safe place to actually explore your faith and ask questions, and maybe church has never been that for you. And so that's what we concentrate on. That's what we value. That's what we talk about. That's what we plan for and pray for. And so just so thankful that you're here, and hope that Hill City becomes a place you can call home. So thanks so much for being here. A couple of things before we get in to the message. The first thing is, normally I talk about generosity at the end of the sermon, but because we're going to take communion together and sing at the end, I want to do it right now. And there are ways to give. You can give in the share boxes or on your seats. There's directions on how to do that online. But I want to talk, as I always do, I want to tell you a story about why your generosity matters, because it's more than just simply the discipline of giving. I was at an event this past week, and there's several hundred people in the room, and it was this massive room, and I see this woman, and I know who she is, and she just looks at me, and she's just going like this. And so she comes walking very briskly over to me, and she goes, "Oh my gosh, I was hoping I'd see a Hill City person here, and I'm so thankful that you're here." And her name's Kathy, and she runs Feed More. And we've partnered with Feed More over the last few years and been able to give over 250,000 meals worth of money to them, and we'll continue to do that this year. And I tell you that story because here's what just was so cool. She just said, without me asking her anything, she's like, "I'm just so thankful for your church. I'm so thankful for your church." And so it's pretty cool that when you go to certain things and people are seeking out a Hill City person to say thank you for your generosity. And so I just want to say thank you to you guys for having that kind of heart to make a big impact throughout Richmond. The second thing is that Mother's Day is next week, and we're going to honor our moms, and we do it well, and we celebrate and have fun with it. Last year we did llamas for our mamas and played Ludacris the whole time, reading Llama Llama. And so we're going to have something different for you guys planned for next Sunday. But I also want to say this. We're going to start a new sermon series next week called Back to Basics, which is all about the basics of why we do this and why it matters, and speaking some life into that and some questions that you guys have asked. But we don't do a mother-specific sermon. And there's a reason for that. And we want to celebrate and honor, and we'll pray for our moms. But we also understand that Mother's Day can be a very difficult day for folks, and we want to be sensitive to that. And so we just kind of continue on with the same sermon series that we were going to do. We do the same thing on Father's Day and everything too, just because we know that. I know people who actually skip church every Mother's Day, because it's so hard, because the focus is so much on that. So I just want to let you know kind of what we're going to be. So please come. Don't skip. But it'll be a great Sunday. So we're in the last week of our Stronger series. And so if you're just hopping in, you can catch up on all the stuff on our website or app or the podcast that we have. But we've been talking about what it takes to have stronger relationships. And so we've been spending the last 5 weeks together, and this is the wrap-up sermon of all of it. So starting next week, you're on your own with your relationships. We wanted to kind of help you build into what it takes to have strong relationships. We want to be aware of what it takes, because if we know what it takes to have a strong relationship, then when something doesn't work or something is broken, we know how to fix it and have some mechanisms in place to do so. And so we've taken a look at what it means to manage conflict, what it means to build character, our sexuality. Last week, Lacey talked about having purpose and whatever placement we have in life, which is a great message. And this week, I was trying to think, all right, what do I want to do to like wrap all of this up? And I started thinking about valuing our relationships and how important that is. And I even wrote this down. I just said, if we value relationships, we don't just hope they will be strong. We put the work in to make sure they are. Because here's what I know. Every healthy relationship is a choice. So is every unhealthy relationship. And so I wanted us to really kind of consider and begin to ask ourselves some questions. Do we really value our relationships like we say that we do? Do we really value them? And so we're going to take a look at a passage of scripture today that kind of feeds into that. But this is what I want to be the starting point. Like, do we really, truly value the relationships that we're in? And I was thinking about how we all want healthy relationships, and we all want that end goal to kind of arrive at our final destination point, and we want to sprint through it. And then we miss things along the way that actually contribute to brokenness and weaker relationships. And I saw this video, and I'm like, this is a great analogy for relationships. And so look at this video. So I love that for a lot of reasons, but I started thinking about, like, we want to rush everything all the time, but here's this kid, he's like, no, I'm every step, right? And someone's trying to rush him, the coach comes in, is like, come on, like, hurry up. He's like, man, get up off me, I'm gonna keep running. And I started thinking about, like, that's what we should think about with each phase of our life. Each stage that we're in, appreciate and value each stage that we have. I think it actually brings about a question that we have to ask ourselves, and it's a simple one, but are you valuing this season of life? Are you valuing this season? Whatever that season is, are you valuing the season? And I think there are ways for us to answer that. You see, if you are valuing this season of life, then you should be able to articulate what you want to get out of it. Whatever it is, I don't care if you're single, married, whatever. I don't care if it's good or bad. Like, you might be thinking, no, this season is terrible for me. There's so much pain and so much suffering. And I would just say this, yeah, but you know what? If you value it, you can still discover good within it. And here's why I know that to be true. We've all been around people who've gone through some bad things. And you've heard someone say something like this. Yeah, that was an awful season of life, but you know what I discovered in it? That was a terrible time for me, but you know, I saw God, and you see those things, and what is that? They've kind of focused or reoriented their thoughts in such a way that began to value that season a little differently, even though there were some difficult moments. So do you value it? So I think we should be able to articulate what we want to get out of this season of life, and if we can't articulate it, then my guess is you don't really value it. Because if I said to you, hey, do you value your health? You would say, yes. And I'll say, how do you value your health? And if you actually value your health, you can articulate something to me that proves that you value it. And so I think the same is true with our relationships. And so we got to be able to articulate, what do I want out of this season of life? And then the second question from that is am I making decisions that will actually take me there? Am I making the decisions that will move me in that direction that I say I want to move towards? And so those becomes important components of whether or not we are actually valuing the season of life. And so I want to look at a passage in Genesis 24 about this guy named Abraham. If you're not familiar with the Bible, Genesis is actually the first book in the Bible. And there's this guy named Abraham who's a central figure in the entire story of Christianity. He's actually a central figure in Judaism, Christianity, and also Islam. Now, we just have different viewpoints on some of the promises. But there's this massive story behind him and these huge promises that God made to Abraham. And he had the son Isaac. And so we're going to pick up the story where Abraham's on the kind of the last season of his life. The last quarter, and we don't know if he's got, 3 seconds left or if he's got a full quarter left, but he's seeing that this is the last season of his life, and so he is going to do some certain things to make sure that the next people coming behind him, in particular his son Isaac, are well prepared for it because he values his relationship with Isaac. And so in Genesis 24, verse 1, it says this, Abraham was now a very old man, and the Lord had blessed him in every way. One day, Abraham said to his oldest servant, the man in charge of his household, take an oath by putting your hand under my thigh. Pause. There are some really weird things in the Bible. And we just got to recognize that right off the top. And this is just one of those things that back then, they would take an oath. And this oath was to mean, like how serious it was, like, hey, don't, like, if I don't fulfill my oath or my side of this, like, may life be taken away from me kind of deal. And so he would put his hand, a person would put their hand underneath another person's thigh, but it really wasn't their thigh, it was actually more upper middle than that, and to show how serious this part was. Now, I don't often say this, but don't follow the Bible in this scenario, because I'm just not sure if we kind of go and be like, oh, I promise, and start going like this to people, that's going to be that successful. So, anyway, he makes that oath, and that's how they do it. Verse 3, he says, swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and earth, that you will not allow my son to marry one of these local Canaanite women. Go instead to my homeland, to my relatives, and find a wife there for my son Isaac. The servant asked, but what if I can't find a young woman who is willing to travel so far from home? Should I then take Isaac to live among your relatives in the land you came from? No, Abraham responded, be careful never to take my son there. For the Lord, the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and my native land, solemnly promised to give this land to my descendants. He will send his angel ahead of you, and he will see to it that you find a wife there for my son. If she is unwilling to come back with you, then you are free from this oath of mine. But under no circumstances are you to take my son there. And so there are a few things that I want to pull out of this that are going to be helpful for us in discovering how we value relationships and kind of put some principles in place that can help us move towards a plan. But the first thing I want to do is actually want to give you an action item to do after the service. And I want to say it now so you can begin thinking about it. And the action item is this. I want you to text someone or email someone or talk to someone that you're going to put a plan together for this season of your life, and you're going to share it with them, and they're going to hold you accountable for it. So that person might be sitting next to you, and you can do that, and that's fine. Might be someone you just need to text later or whatever, or call later. But I want there to be someone who you can share a plan with that shows and proves that you really value this season of life and that you want that person to ask you questions about it. Okay, so here's some things that we can take from this passage that help us establish that plan and prove that we can value life. And the first thing is that we want to be thankful. We want to be thankful. Again, as we're kind of mapping out your plan and all of this, everyone's plan is going to look different, but we want to set some core principles. And the first one is to be thankful. We see that Abraham is thinking about all the ways that God has blessed him. And as he's prepping for what's to come, he understands, man, God has just made so many promises to me, and he's blessed me in so many different ways. And he has this heart that is filled with gratitude. Do you know, if we see every season as a gift, then our hearts will be filled with gratitude. I mean, if you see whatever season you're in, so if you're single in here, you have a gift of singleness, not because you're single. It's just because it's a gift in this season. In the same way, it's a gift to be married. It's a gift to be dating. It's a gift to have kids. Every season is a gift. And so we have to ask ourselves, do I see this season as a gift? Whatever the season is, am I thankful for the season? So if you're single in here, and again, I said this at the start of the series, that we won't ever idolize marriage. Jesus was single, Paul was single, so many people that we look up to in the Bible were single, and we don't ever like throw marriage above singleness in any way, shape, or form. But are you valuing the season? Because there are some pretty incredible things about being single. You have freedom. And if you're, like, I would assume, like, if you were parents in here, you should have said amen there. But but you have freedom that, you know, if someone's married or someone's married with kids, that they don't have. Like, if you came to me like, hey, Wags, you want to go see a Red Sox game in Boston this week? My initial thought would be like, yeah, that would be amazing. But you know what I then have to do? I have to go talk to Lacey about our calendar, about what's happening with our kids, and can this actually work? And so I have less freedom to do certain things. It doesn't mean that my time is more valuable than your time or anything like that, but you do have more freedom. And so it's important to see, like, am I understanding the freedom that I have in this season of life, and do I value that? If you're single, I want you to just picture that person you'd like to be with, or the kind of person, and keep it Christian. But like, if you picture, like, what is that person like? What are they? What kind of character do they have? What do I like hope that they're like? And let me ask you this: are you using this season of life to prepare for that person? Would that person be interested in who you are? See, this is the time to set the foundation for those very things. And so it's important to see this season as a gift, and it's an incredible gift to have. If you're dating somebody or in that season of life, do you care about do you value your future enough to set up boundaries now? See, dating should be, hypothetically, a breeding ground for growth. You know, you might go on a few dates with someone, it doesn't work out, and you kind of learn some things in the process. You might be dating someone and now you feel like it's getting a little bit serious, but are you setting up boundaries to care for and value who you're going to be in the future? That's important. So that you're setting the right tone for years to come with who you are. If you're married, does your calendar prove that you value your marriage? Like, would your spouse say, man, I just love the way you take time to, would your calendar prove it? Or does it prove that you actually value some other things more than your marriage? In this season of life, if you're a parent, we know this, like some stages of parenting you like more than others. Like sometimes you're like, man, I'm more of a baby guy or a baby woman or whatever. And like, man, elementary's tough because they're not really that funny. But like middle and high school, like, you know, as they get to high school, then they're starting to be funny, you know, and all that. And so you might like high school more and you struggle. But some people like the younger ages more. But here's what we all know if you're a parent. You never get that stage back. You don't. And so are you valuing this season of life as a parent? So it becomes, so this idea of being gratitude and having a heart of gratitude and being so thankful becomes a key part of establishing our plan and establishing who we are and how we think. You see, even, you guys know I love how our brain works, and if you've been here at any length of time, but I love even think about what gratefulness does to us in our brains. It actually completely rewires our brains. It feeds into our reward centers that actually boost the bonds that we have with other people when we're positive and we're grateful for what we have, that our relationships with other people become stronger, and that our brains actually crave it more. So it completely rewires us. The part of our brain, the hypothalamus, that controls our hunger, controls our immune system, controls our sleep patterns, controls our metabolism. When we are more positive and more grateful, it works and it functions in a smooth manner like it should. It creates new neurological pathways. They've done brain scans on people who are pessimistic versus those that are optimistic. And they look at brain scans and they see that they actually have more neurological pathways for forgiveness, for encouragement, for comfort, for strength, for perseverance, and for generosity and empathy. All why? Because you're just training your brain to do, like, our brains like get so attached to positivity and gratefulness that it's not that you ignore anything negative, it's just that your brain will crave something more and it builds stronger relationships with people. Why wouldn't we want to do that? So like part of our plan has got to be like, all right, how can I establish good habits of being thankful? I should start and end my days that way. I should have a weekly rhythm that I like can reach out to people who have influenced me. And I don't care how it is, even if it's in a small way, to just say thank you for doing that. I would take opportunities, like if you're at a restaurant or if you're at a store, be the person to be the initiator and being grateful and thankful. It does something, completely rewires our brains and will change how we view people and the health and strength of our relationships. The second thing that we see is that we need to be proactive. We need to be proactive. In verse 2 and verse 3, Abraham is doing something really interesting there. You see, he understands that strong relationships need a plan. Every strong relationship that I know of, every healthy one, really healthy one that I know of, they can articulate some kind of plan. Maybe they've never actually thought about it and put it down on paper, but as they begin to speak, hey, what do you guys do as friends? Or what do you guys do as a couple? And they start saying certain things. They have a plan in place, and it's important to be able to like say what that plan is for you guys as a friend grouping or as a couple. And all strong relationships have a plan. And so what Abraham is actually doing is he's setting one in place. I mean, like, honestly, if we don't have a plan in place, do we really value this season of life? Like, if we don't have a plan for this stage of life, do we really value it? I feel like that's a question that we got to wrestle with and kind of accept the conviction of that. And see, like, in this stage, no matter what this stage is, do I have a plan? And if I don't, like, do I really value this season? See, Abraham did. And so Abraham knows things are coming to a close, and he wants to set his son Isaac up, right? So he's being proactive. He's being proactive and looking at what's to come. And he's like, all right, here's the deal. I've got this plan, and I want you to it can't be with the Canaanites. You can't let Isaac marry a woman from the Canaanites, because the Canaanites are actually gonna take him away from the things of God. They're gonna take him down a path that he shouldn't go down. In a moment of just pure honesty and vulnerability, how many of you guys have dated someone you wish you hadn't? Okay. How many of you guys would have been like, I really wish I'd have been proactive about that? Yeah, and so here's what he's doing. He's like, he's trying to be proactive about saying, man, I don't want you to go down a road that you shouldn't go down. Those things, like, and we all have things that we're vulnerable to. We all have things that we know we struggle with. We all have things that we know if we engage those things, it's just going to take us down a rough path. And so do you have a proactive plan and boundaries in place to make sure you don't? That becomes an important piece. That's what Abraham is actually setting up for Isaac. A third thing that we see is that he craves clarity. He craves clarity. I remember I was talking to somebody about they went out on a date, or what they thought was a date. And they ended up saying, I was like, so what's a date? And she said, I don't know. I'm like, how do you not know? And she's like, well, I mean, we went on this date together, but then it didn't seem like a date, and then it didn't end like a date. But, like, he did pay for, I don't know. And I'm like, oh, gosh. And so here's the thing. We all know that in any moment where there hasn't been clarity, there's going to be confusion. And so at the heart of every strong and healthy relationship is this desire of clear communication, because communication becomes this driver for clarity. And so for all of us, in every relationship, we want to be very particular about not only the plan in place, but that we are proactive and clear about how we're going to communicate. What things do we have in place to make sure that we continue to talk like we should? If you guys I do this with a lot of premarital counseling folks, and I always say this, and I've said it here several times. One of the things that I always tell our couples to do in premarital counseling is I say, hey, have things set up on your calendar on a quarterly basis for the first couple of years of your marriage where you are intentionally discussing the main things of your marriage. So talk about your sex life, your financial life, your communication, your conflict, your hobbies, what you'd like to do more or what would you like to do less of, some different things. Just like plan it out and invest it in that way so you both know, man, we are going into this day, this time, we're going to talk about this. I tell even as people start dating, get a little more serious, I tell them the same thing. Why? Because you're investing in, you're trying to create moments of clarity and communication. One of the other things that Abraham does that I think is also pretty interesting is he sends his servant to the land of his relatives, where his friends and family would be. And why would he do that? Because he also knows that your close community of people are going to be the ones that protect you the most. They don't want you dating an idiot. They don't want you to marrying crazy. They don't want you to do any of those things. They don't want you to be around any kind of friend grouping that's going to be destructive for you. And so you want your family, your close people that you truly respect and you know that have wisdom, and that you want them to invest in your relationship. And so you might be thinking, yeah, but my family stinks. And I know that happens sometimes. You're like, I don't even want to bring them around. I don't want them around this person. And I get that. But what about friends? What about close friends you respect? Friends that you know would keep you down the path that you should be going down, and would ask like really good questions about this person. I mean, even like the Spice Girls had it right. Like, if you want to be my lover, you've got to get with my friends. And so they were theologically sound with everything. But so that's the point. Like, we've got to like understand, we've got some people in our lives that we want to have them invest in our relationships to create the clarity that we need. The fourth thing is we need to be trustworthy. And be trustworthy. You know, he says that the servant is like, yeah, but what about if this happens? And Abraham keeps bringing it back around and saying, no, this is the plan. And you've committed to this plan, and you've said that you would do this. Be trustworthy with what you say. Let your yes be yeses. Let your no's be no's. Like, be truthful and honest to who you are. I think sometimes we lose this part. And you guys all know this. Wherever there should be trust, when something's weak and unhealthy, we'll always put suspicion. And so if you feel that, you know, okay, man, there should I should trust there, but all I do is I'm just so suspicious. And there are reasons for that, of course. But we want to be trustworthy. We want to be trustworthy people at work. We want to be trustworthy. Like if you said to your spouse or to your best friend, can you trust everything that I say? And could they honestly respond with a yes? Like that's so important to developing strong relationships and being committed to having healthy, strong relationships, no matter what they are. Even sometimes I think we sacrifice that part for the sake of gossip and being in the know. I always tell people, hey, if you're around people that gossip or you're part of the gossip train, whether at work or in your friendship grouping, guess what happens when you're not there? And so it's important to just understand, are you sacrificing something just to be a part of something that isn't healthy or that will distract you in some way? So we need to be trustworthy. And the last thing is this, we need to commit to the process. In verse 7 and 8, Abraham is emphasizing this process, this plan that they need to be committed to. And he understands that we've got choices in the process and everything else. He even ends it by saying, hey, even if she doesn't want to come back, you're not bound by this oath anymore, but guess what? We're going to stick to this plan because we know this plan's going to work. We know this plan's going to produce what we say that we want. And we have choices. Now, I believe that every strong relationship is a result of everyday choices. It is. It's every single day we wake up and we make choices about our relationships. We decide, we choose whether or not we want to have a healthy or an unhealthy relationship. We choose whether we want to invest in the right things or not. We make these choices in every relationship that we have. But here's the thing, we're drawn to the infatuation. We're drawn to the I just want to lock eyes, and I just want to know, like, this passion is there. And we love those moments. But you know what? In the infatuation stages, they're all fleeting. We know that. If you're in one right now, sorry. If you're, like, you're just in one, I'm just like, it's going to happen. But you know what? Strong, healthy relationships, and when you get past that infatuation stage and you build in the right stuff, that far surpasses the infatuation stage. I mean, far surpasses it. There's so much more trust and emotional health there and everything, and a bond that can't be broken. It far surpasses it. But we're drawn to the infatuation stage, and I get it. It's emotional. We like when we find a new friend, or we get a new job, or we buy a new car, right? We're like, man, I love my new car. Do you guys see you get infatuated with your car? But meanwhile, a year later, it's like you got gum stuck on the floor. You haven't washed it. Who knows what's in the back seat? And you're just like, it's just my car. Well, we've gotten rid of all those emotions that were there. Why? There's no depth to it. But when we create the plan, and we stick to the process and commit to the process and making these choices, we add these layers of foundation that will enable us to have healthy relationships around us. Now I end with this because this is the most important relationship that we have, and that's the relationship with Jesus. You know, we've talked a lot in this series about the practical nature of our relationships we have with other people. We've also talked about the relationship we have with Jesus. But there's also a component to this that is so critically important, and that's this, that if we invest in and do this same plan with and have these same components to a life in a relationship with Jesus, the end result is unreal. Here's why. You can't love Jesus more and not love people more. It's impossible. You can't be growing in your faith and loving Jesus more and then hating people more or just kind of being off-put by people more. So if someone's like, I'm loving Jesus so much, I'm growing in my faith and I'm doing all this stuff, and they're like just terrible to be around, they're so negative, and you're like, people don't even like you, then in your response, you have the freedom to say this, I don't think you love Jesus as much as you think you do. Because when the right thing is built in us, in this love and this desire Jesus built in us, then something else begins to take shape. You know, in John 1:12, it says this. It says that, but to all who believed in him and accepted him, he gave the right to become children of God. Now, here's what's amazing about this. It doesn't say, if you believe in him and accept who Jesus is, then there's all these rules you have to follow, and then he deems you worthy to be a human. It says, you know what? You believe and you accept who I am. I'm going to give you this gift of grace. this gift of being known, this gift to understand how valuable I think you are and how much worth is there, and to become a child of God. See, it changes everything. And then we begin to be thankful for that and be proactive in that relationship and have some clarity in that relationship and be trustworthy in that relationship and commit to the process of that relationship. Here's what else the Bible says. Then something then comes out of us. This fruit comes out of us. These characteristics that make it clear that we are more loving. It says in Galatians 5, it says love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control will all come out of us in that way. Now, I wouldn't say I'm an expert on relationships by any stretch, but I do know this much, that if those things are coming out of me, I'm going to have some pretty healthy relationships around me. If those things are coming out of me, people are going to want to be around me. If those things are going to come out of me, I'm going to be a great dad. I'm going to be a great husband. I'm going to be a great friend. So that becomes the strongest relationship we can actually develop. I'm going to ask the band to come back up, and we're going to sing one last song together. But before we do that, we're going to actually take communion together. We end every series that we do, every sermon series that we do, we take communion as a way to kind of put a cap on everything. And so let me say this about communion. One, don't feel pressure to take communion. If you don't want to, you don't have to. No one's going to judge you for it. No worries at all. Communion is for those that believe in Jesus and because it's a symbolic way to honor that. Two, and I know this matters to a lot of people, but the bread is gluten-free and it's juice, not wine. So I know that matters for different reasons. And so what I want you to do, though, is when you receive the elements from folks, if you would like to take it, just hold on to it. And I'm going to walk us through communion together and pray us through, and then we're going to sing a song, and then we'll close it out. But here's why communion is such a big deal. I know you're going to have to do two things at once to listen and grab the elements. But communion's a really big deal for a lot of reasons. One, it's because it shows how much Jesus values us, that he would die for us, that he would rise again, that it's not just for that, there's more to it than that. But it does, a part of this story with Jesus and his death and his sacrifice and what he paid for us, a part of the meaning of it is how much he values us and how much he says you're worth. Another part of this is understanding that God always fulfills his promises. In this case, to save and to restore and to redeem and to call us one of his own, meaning his son or his daughter. And so what we want to do is when you get these in your hand, we're going to pause, and I just want you to reflect. I want you to take 30 seconds or so before I lead us through and just reflect on what God's speaking into your heart right now, but maybe some kind of plan you need to put in place, or maybe something that needs to shift with him. Or maybe it's something that, maybe it's just that, man, it's the first time I want to choose you and know you and love you. So let's pause here for just a minute together, and then I'll lead us through taking communion. So God, as we hold these elements in our hands and we take the bread, we realize that this symbolizes your body being broken for us, that you don't leave us in the midst of our pain, you don't leave us in the midst of our struggle, that you're with us every step of the way. So go ahead and take the bread. God, we have this juice, and this juice represents your blood being shed for us and the establishment of a new promise, a new hope, a new relationship that is made through you. So go ahead and drink the juice. So God, I'm so thankful that for your power over sin, for your power and victory over death and evil. I'm so thankful that you look at us as one of your own, as your son or your daughter, if we choose to accept that. So thankful that You give us so much grace. And through that grace, we experience so much freedom, and so much purpose, and so much hope. I'm so thankful that you desire that we have healthy, strong relationships. Because in the midst of that, we actually then even experience you more. So God, we're just so thankful for who you are and what you're doing in us. We give this to you. In your name we pray, everybody said, amen. Will you stand and sing this last song with us?